Okay, I want to speak, as it says in your schedule, on the Middle East peace deals in the light of Bible prophecy. And I published my own newspaper on this one. Middle East peace deal shocks the world. And I'm referring to a peace deal, as you can see on the map. Most of you are probably familiar with this deal. The arrow at the top is toward Israel, and the arrow to your right is toward the United Arab Emirates. Under the leadership of President Trump, this deal came together and was announced on August 13th. And then the actual accord was signed on September 15th at the White House. And this is a what they're calling a warm peace, not a cold peace, a very warm peace, exchanging embassies, ambassadors, trade, airline flights, cooperation on security, energy, water, health. It's about as warm as anything I could have even imagined happening in the Middle East. Now, the headline said Middle East peace deal shocks the world. That headline is an exaggeration because that peace deal didn't shock the world, especially in my opinion here in the United States. It barely made a ripple here in our country. Little or nothing of it was said in the news, although it was there. But other news has totally drowned this out. People that have heard of it in our country, I guess, would think, and this is my speculation, the average person's thinking, well, no big deal to me. That's on the other side of the world. It doesn't affect me. But I can assure you that there are some people in the world that this deal has shocked them. And people in the Middle East are shocked by this deal because of a couple of reasons. One is there's never been anything like it in the Middle East, nothing even close. There were deals that Israel made with Egypt in 1979 and a deal with Jordan in 1994. Those were legitimate peace deals with those two nations, but those are what are called cold peace. We're not going to fight each other. But nothing like this deal that was made with the UAE. The second reason that this shocked so many people is no one saw it coming. No one saw it coming. The only people that even knew it was in the works were very tight inner circle with President Trump, Benjamin Netanyahu, and the leader of the UAE. Even people in their own administrations didn't know it was coming because they kept it so tight. This was a shock. And I know I'm speaking personally. It was a shock to me too. I never thought it would happen quite like this. And the reason this is so significant is because it bears, in my opinion, on two prophecies in Scripture. 1 Thessalonians 5, 2 through 4, and Daniel 9, 27. Now, I want to quickly and clearly say, this deal is not a fulfillment of prophecy. It is not a fulfillment of prophecy. But what I believe is this deal is a breakthrough on momentum. And my key word is momentum. I believe this is a momentum breaker toward the fulfillment, or could be used by God. I'm very careful. This could be used by God as a momentum breaker toward the fulfillment of these two prophecies. So let's start with the 1 Thessalonians 5, 2 and 3. Paul writes, "The day of the Lord will come just like a thief in the night. For while they are saying peace and security, then sudden destruction will come upon them." Now, for teaching purposes, just for a moment, I want to take out the middle two lines. The day of the Lord so comes as a thief in the night, then sudden destruction comes upon them. I want to illustrate that with a simple timeline. I'm sure all of you have seen a timeline like that. The day of the Lord is a technical term in Scripture referring to the end time events beginning with the start of the tribulation. The tribulation, as we know from the second seal judgment, begins with a war. The sudden destruction referred to there is a war that breaks out at the very beginning of the tribulation. And this is going to come like a thief in the night. It's going to catch the world totally off guard. And that's underscored by the middle two lines from what we have here that say, while they're saying peace and security. While they're saying peace and security, then sudden destruction will come upon them. So let me put that back in the timeline. There you see peace and security right before the beginning of the tribulation. And also on that timeline, the rapture occurs on the very day that the tribulation begins. Now, when they say peace and safety, it's not that the world will say we want it, but that the world will say we have it. At least we think we have it. I mean, the world's saying right now, they've been saying for a long time, we want peace and safety. And I might add, this peace and security has to center on the Middle East because prophecy centers on Israel. Prophecy centers on Israel, and so this peace and security has to concern what's happening in and around Israel, first of all, but then a sense of peace and security that the world feels because of the peace that is in the Middle East. Now, I said earlier that the world will say on this day, we have it, but the world is not yet saying we have it. The world's saying we want it. And that's because as you look at the map on the Middle East, we need to remember that this part of the world has been characterized by hostility for many, many years, especially since the return of the Jews to the land. The Jews came into the land by the hand of God in fulfillment of prophecy through the 20th century. That has just led to increased hostility by the neighbors of Israel. In 1948, when Israel declared their independence as a statehood for the first time since 70 AD, there was immediate war to try to destroy them from the surrounding Arab nations. God miraculously intervened and gave Israel the victory. You can only explain that as the hand of God. In 1967, the Six-Day War again was an attempt by the surrounding Arab nations to literally destroy the nation of Israel. You know the story that God miraculously intervened again in 1967. But the hostility continued. It intensified in 1979 when Iran, the Iran Revolution, when Iran came under Shiite Muslim control. And as you look at Iran there on the map in the upper right-hand corner, Iran is unashamedly anti-Israel, as we all know, and anti-United States and anti-Sunni Muslim. Iran is Shiite Muslim. In fact, they are not Arabs. They are Persians. They're a different race and a different religion as the other Arab Muslim nations. Iran is a threat not just to Israel, but to all those other Arab Muslim nations. And they know it, and they're scared of Iran. And they should be, because Iran is so much more powerful than they. And this is the situation, especially since President Obama's treaty with Iran, when the Arab nation, the Muslim Arab nations around saw this as a threat to them, not a help to them. Now, with that as a background, what we have seen in recent years, and I've got three dates here, these three dates signify events that occurred to bring momentum. The momentum started before August 13th, which is the last date up there, because in May 21st, 2017, and May 14th, 2018, two very significant things happened that set the stage for what we've experienced in recent weeks. May 21st, 2017, Donald Trump had been president for about 4 months. He was inaugurated in January. And I'm sure he planned this even before he became president, that after he becomes president, this is what I'm going to do. His first overseas trip as the president of the United States was to Riyadh in Saudi Arabia, the capital of Saudi Arabia. This was his first foreign trip, which makes it so significant, because he determined when he became president, this was his first foreign agenda move, is to go right into the heart of the Middle East and the Arab states, and he called for a meeting, and the invitation was well received, because in this room he spoke to the heads or representative of 55 Arab Muslim nations. And what he said on that day is so significant. And I didn't pay any attention to it until the last couple of months. I didn't pay as much attention to it as I did. I went back and read and listened to this speech, and I encourage you to do that. It is moving when you realize what he said that day in light of what's happened since. But he said, in essence, was, we have to stand together against Iran, and we can do it. We have to bring unity and peace to the Middle East because of the threat of Iran. Well, that'll make you want to go watch it yourself, and you can watch the whole thing on your own. It's fantastic what he said. And you could see he was laying the groundwork for what we've experienced since that date. All right. The second date is May 14th, 2018. And what happened on that day is expressed in this map. The United States, we moved our embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. In 1995, the United States Congress voted to move the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. Every president since 1995 has signed a waiver every 6 months to delay the move because of fear. Every president has been afraid to move the embassy because they thought it would cause this big uproar in the Middle East and start a war or something like that. President Trump before May 14th, 6 months before, whatever, didn't sign the waiver and said, we're moving the embassy. The significance of that was, for the first time, a nation, legitimized Israel in the sight of the world in terms of their claim to Jerusalem as their capital. First nation to legitimize Israel in that sense, which gave Israel a position in the world that it had never had, where there was recognition from the outside that we are here to stay and Jerusalem is our capital. Benjamin Netanyahu, the Prime Minister of Israel, had some very, I think, significant words to say on that day. Let's see if this plays. And no, it doesn't. Go listen to Benjamin Netanyahu's speech on the day that the embassy was moved to Jerusalem. All right. That leads us to August 13th, 2020, just weeks ago. The two events that are above that, May in 2017, 2018, laid the groundwork for what happened on August 13th, just weeks ago. And then I had another really exciting video to play, a 30-second clip from Donald Trump's speech. And I believe it was in there, that Donald Trump said, this is just the beginning. And this is what's so important. This clip might have been the most important one I wanted for you to hear. He said that this is just the beginning. There are more to follow. And then Benjamin Netanyahu said the same thing that same day from Jerusalem. That's why the word momentum is such an important word here. And, you know, we saw just a week or two after May 13th that Bahrain said, we won in. And on September 15th, Bahrain and the UAE signed peace accords at the White House. And many of you, I'm sure, noticed in the news last week that Sudan is in. They announced, President Trump made an announcement last week, Sudan is in, and that deal's going to be coming. And even then, last week, he repeated, there are more to come. There are more to come. This is amazing for us that know the prophetic word of God. This is movement. In fact, the terminology that I saw in the news even last week, the new Middle East. I saw it two or three places. The new Middle East. This is amazing to come out of secular sources. We have the new Middle East. And it's extremely significant in light of not only the movement we see in those dates, but in light of what the scriptures say. That there's coming a day that the world will say, we have peace and security. And those of us that are familiar with this passage should just be beside ourselves with excitement, in my opinion. And what Paul says in the very next verse is significant for you and me, because he says, "But you, brethren, are not in darkness, that this day should overtake you as a thief." If the rapture came tomorrow or very soon, there's not one of us in this room anyway, because I didn't have any idea that was coming. We will live to see the world say peace and security before the rapture, based on my understanding of this passage. That could happen today, by the way. It may take a little bit longer. I don't know. It could take weeks, months, or years. I don't know. But certainly we see movement, significant movement, toward the fulfillment of this prophecy. God may shake it up and start all over and do something totally different, but this is very significant if indeed God is actually moving us toward the fulfillment of this prophecy. Now, as I mentioned, there are two prophecies that relate to this. The other is in Daniel 9:27, and here's just a highlight and a quick interpretive statement of Daniel 9:27. "They, 10 kings, shall confirm a covenant with many, Israel, for 1 week, 7 years, and it will involve sacrifice and offering." Now, the reason I say "they" is because of the argument that Zane Hodges makes in his book, Power to Make War, where he says that should be translated with "they," not "he." And it's a very legitimate translation in the Hebrew. It's the preferred, Zane said, by far it's the preferred translation of this. Most translations say "he." Most prophecy teachers and prophecy books have "he." And it just changes the whole concept of what's going on here if it's "he." It's not "he," it's "they." And in the context of Daniel, that would be the 10 kings that Daniel has a vision of and explanation of, later confirmed in the book of Revelation. "These 10 kings shall confirm a covenant with many, Israel, for 1 week." Probably most of you are familiar with Daniel's 70 weeks. These are weeks of years, not weeks of days. It's a seven-year period. The key terms in this verse, as far as we're concerned here today, are the terms sacrifice and offering. Because to have sacrifice and offering, you have to have a temple. And here's what this looks like on our timeline. Because it's 7 years, we know it will last. This covenant will be effective through the 7 years of the tribulation. The covenant occurs on the first, or is confirmed on the first day of the tribulation, which also coincides with the day of the rapture. The word "confirmed," it could be taken a couple of ways. It could mean it's announced, or it could mean it goes into effect and has already been announced. I'm going to repeat that because that's kind of a deep thought. The word "confirmed" really doesn't, at least in my mind, tell us for sure whether it means it's going to be announced, that's what "confirmed" means, or it's going to go into effect and was previously announced. I tend to think it will have been previously announced and go into effect. That's what "confirmed" means. Another way to translate the idea of "confirmed" there is "made strong." It's made strong, which sounds like it goes into effect, and therefore it was previously announced. Now, I got a little jumbled up there. It will go into effect and last for 7 years. I guess what I was trying to say is, will we know about it ahead of time, or is it going to just all of a sudden be announced on that day? That's what I meant to say, and I'm sorry for the confusion. All right. We know from the prophecy of Daniel and a number of other passages in Revelation that there will be a temple built during the tribulation in Israel. It has to be built on the Temple Mount. This is the temple on the Temple Mount artist rendition in Jesus' day. Of course, we know that in 70 AD, the temple was destroyed. We know that in Israel today, that's what's left. We look at that site today and we realize it's just in ruins. And the only structures, three prominent structures on there on the Temple Mount today, as I'm using the arrows here, the Dome of the Rock, a Muslim shrine. Here's a closer look at that. A second structure is the Al-Aqsa Mosque, pointed out by that arrow. Here's a closer look at the Al-Aqsa Mosque. The third structure is really outside of the Temple Mount. It's a restraining wall on the western side of the Temple Mount called the Western Wall. Sometimes it had been called the Wailing Wall. Here's a closer look at the Western Wall. Most important thing is what's not there. There's no temple. There hasn't been a temple on the Temple Mount since 70 AD. The Jews since 70 AD for over 1900 years have not been able to offer sacrifices. And we know from the prophecy of Daniel and Revelation that there's got to be a temple built up there on that Temple Mount someday. Now, some have suggested that it's got to be built where the Dome of the Rock is. And if so, the Dome of the Rock would have to come down. I don't think that would go over very well in the Muslim world. It would make some people very upset. But maybe that'll happen. Another possibility is that there will be a temple built on the Temple Mount that will coexist with the Muslim structures that are already there. And that's a very doable thing in terms of the land, because there's 36 acres up there on that Temple Mount. It was just hard for me to imagine that is 36 acres, but I've looked it up many times and it is. I had to look it up again to just say, is that what it said? It is. 36 acres. That's a lot of land, and there's plenty of room up there to build a temple that would coexist with the Dome of the Rock and the Al-Aqsa Mosque. However, even that would make many Muslims very upset to coexist with a Jewish temple. That in recent years has just been an unthinkable idea. That leads me to talk about the Abraham Accord, the term Abraham Accord, because the deal that was made with the UAE is called the Abraham Accord. And that's a very significant title. And again, I've got a fantastic video that we're not going to hear.
David Friedman, to
good,
please.
We got it. Okay, I want to go back. You ready?
I'm ready.
All right. So Donald Trump introduces this treaty with UAE by explaining we're calling it the Abraham Accord. Then he turns it over to David Friedman, who's our ambassador to Israel, and David Friedman explains why it's called the Abraham Accord. This is really exciting to listen to, if it works.
I'd like to ask our ambassador, David Friedman, to please explain why we're doing and calling it the Abraham Accord. David?
Thank you, Mr. President, and congratulations to you on brokering this historic peace agreement. Abraham, as many of you know, was the father of all three great faiths. He's referred to as Abraham in the Christian faith, Ibrahim in the Muslim faith, and Avraham in the Jewish faith. And no person better symbolizes the potential for unity among all these three great faiths than Abraham, and that's why this accord has been given that name.
That is just so moving every time I listen to it. I just am amazed at what's going on here, because it has been religion that has divided the Middle East, to say the least. Religion is the issue. It's not economics or politics. It's religion. And the biggest issue with Muslims concerning Israel is religion. And the Abraham Accord has just turned this upside down because you just heard it. We are not talking about religion that divides us, David Friedman said. We are talking about religion that unites us, focused in a man. His name is Abraham. He's the father of the three great faiths, Christianity, Islam, and Judaism, although I'm not sure Abraham would claim all of that. But that's how he's viewed, right? And it's amazing that they're saying, let's get together over religion that we have in common in relation to our forefather, Abraham. Keep that in mind, because that's the mentality right now in this new thinking in the Middle East. All right, now I want to go back, go forward to, again, point out the Al-Aqsa Mosque. The Al-Aqsa Mosque, again, was referred to by Donald Trump the day on August 13th when the UAE-Israel deal was announced. And I want you, this is 15 seconds, listen to what he says about the Al-Aqsa Mosque.
This deal will allow much greater access to Muslims from throughout the world to peacefully pray at the Al-Aqsa Mosque, which is a very special place for them.
All right, here it is again. For decades, there has been so much propaganda, and I'm using that word intentionally. This is nothing but propaganda that's primarily come from the Palestinians, that the Al-Aqsa Mosque is under attack. We have no access to the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Israel storming the Al-Aqsa Mosque, breaking in opposition to the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Every bit of it has been untrue, but the propaganda has been bought by many in the world, including the Muslim world. Now, what Donald Trump was referring to there is very strategic. We're not talking about a sightseeing tour for Muslims. We're talking about a religious experience. Where he wants, and Israel wants, and the UAE wants Muslims to come in and pray at the Al-Aqsa Mosque and see the truth. That it is not under attack or opposition from Israel. Israel is very open, totally open to letting Muslims come and worship on the Temple Mount. And that is so important to develop momentum, and that's my key word here, momentum in the thinking of the Muslim world toward peace, true peace with Israel based on a common religious ancestor in Abraham. Now, keep that in mind, because I learned something right after August 13th that I had no idea. Some of you may have known about this, but it's just kind of mind-boggling. I learned that the UAE and Israel have had a lot of discussion and cooperation going on for a number of years now. The Muslim religious leaders in the UAE encouraged discussion and cooperation with Israel's religious leaders to try to build a common thinking about what we have in common in terms of our two religions. A year ago, 13 months ago, I think it was September 21st, 2019, there was an announcement made in Abu Dhabi, the capital of the UAE, about the construction of a compound called the Abraham Faith House. That's an artist's conception, but it's under construction right now in Abu Dhabi. Now, what you see there are three buildings. The one over on the left is a very modern mosque. The one in the back is a very modern church. And the one to your right is a very modern synagogue. So what is going on here is a construction of a compound where these three major religions are expressing we have something in common. We're together. It's called the Abraham Faith House. No accident that Abraham's name is involved here. because what they're saying tangibly and visibly and under construction with a lot of money being spent is we're going to make this expression of solidarity and unity through the Abraham Faith House. Now, you look at that, what is being built in Abu Dhabi, and you think, wonder where else we could do something like that. Can you guess where else we might could try something like that? How about Jerusalem? That would be the place. How about right there on the Temple Mount? I mean, we've got a Muslim mosque. All we need is a Jewish temple. I don't know anything about a Christian church being built up there. We don't need one of those up there anyway. But at least the Muslim structure that's already there and a Jewish temple, that would go hand in hand with what's happening down there in Abu Dhabi at the Abraham Faith House. This to me is mind-boggling what it does. And again, I don't know if that's going to happen that way, but I know something has to happen to get that temple up there. And I see it could very easily be what the steps that God is sovereignly moving to get the world to the point where the world says we need to stand behind Israel in the building of this temple. Now, going back to the prophecy of Daniel, he said there will be 10 kings that shall confirm this covenant with Israel. 10 kings are going to stand behind this covenant in some official way. We know from the writing of Daniel that these 10 kings will come out of what was once the Roman Empire. This is the Roman Empire with the modern, with the boundaries with the modern day nations in it. The imagery of Daniel is of the image of Rome, you know, the statue of Daniel with the two legs and the 10 toes, 5 on each foot. That likely represents the Roman Empire that was became an east and west, the two east-west divisions of the Roman Empire. And this is how the Roman Empire divided into east and west. The 10 toes, each of the toes represents a king. So what we learn from the vision of Daniel is the day is coming when 5 kings from the west and 5 kings from the east, 5 leaders of 5 nations from the west, the western part of the old Roman Empire, 5 from the eastern part of the old Roman Empire will form this covenant with Israel. Now, the UAE is not on that map. So I say, what's happened with the UAE, Bahrain, Sudan, is not a fulfillment of prophecy. But I believe, as I hope, at least in my mind, that we are seeing momentum. These deals are momentum that could move other nations to get involved in not only peace, but standing behind Israel and the building of the temple. All right, so going back to 1 Thessalonians 5. Trying to think, I'm through at 2:30, so I need to quit at 2:20. While they're saying peace and security, then sudden destruction will come upon them. I want us to look at that in a little bit different angle this time, and that's to focus on the sudden destruction. Think about that as we again look at the timeline. Tribulation begins with a war. We know that because of the second seal of Revelation. Now, think about the peace and security. The world's going to say we have peace and security. Suddenly there's a war. We also know that the covenant is going to go into effect on the first day of the tribulation. Now, what we need to think is, what is it that would cause a war to break out when the world has been saying peace and security? Well, I don't know. Certainly I don't know. But I'm going to make a possible suggestion of what could happen. And I've got arrows pointing to Iran and Turkey. Iran and Turkey are very outspoken about the Abraham Accord that we're seeing and the peace with treaty with Bahrain and Sudan. They are not happy. They're extremely upset. And the leader of Turkey has really gotten outspoken about what's going on over there. And even before the deal was made, he was saying that Turkey has a right to Jerusalem and the Temple Mount, you know, historically with the Ottoman Empire and all that. He's just a real zealot for this. So even though the world will someday say we have peace and security, if this happens in the near future and there's an announcement about this temple being built in Jerusalem, Iran and Turkey are going to be very unhappy. And they've got potential, certainly militarily speaking, to start a pretty significant war. Perhaps that will be the scenario of the war breaking out to start the tribulation. Again, I don't know. All I'm saying is the world is ripe. The world is ripe. God could shake it all up and put it together a little bit different way. But Jesus himself said, be watchful, stay awake, and pray, lest coming suddenly he find you sleeping. Now, I'd make a distinction between being watchful and staying awake. And I think I can support it right there in the verse. Staying awake is the opposite of sleep. What he's talking about when he talks about staying awake or sleeping is where are you spiritually? Where am I spiritually? Where are you spiritually? Are you asleep spiritually or are you awake spiritually? Are you walking with Christ? Are you in fellowship with Christ? Is he going to find you on the day of the rapture awake spiritually? And certainly we want him to find us awake. We want him to find us walking with him. But watchful is a different word and it's a different thought. To be watchful means to be watching. Watching for what's going on in the world. And in the last generation, the generation that's alive on the day of the rapture, that generation should be watching. That generation should be watching and knowing that something's going on. As Paul said earlier in the verse that follows this one, you should not be caught off guard, or whatever the words were that he used. You are not in the darkness that this day should overtake you as a thief, because you've been watching. So, to say it another way, you could be watching and be asleep. You with me? You could be aware of what I've talked about today, and you could say, you know, I think Jesus could be coming soon because of what's happening in the world, and be out of fellowship with Christ and not walking with him. On the other hand, there could be a Christian who is awake spiritually and totally asleep to what's going on, not watching what's going on. But the two go together in this sense, that the more watchful you are, I believe the more motivation there is to stay awake. How could there not be? How could we not be motivated to stay awake spiritually and want to just keep growing closer to Christ, knowing that he is making us aware every day through what he's doing in this world that is coming could be soon? All right, I'm going to stop there, even though I had a few more things I could say, but I want to leave time for questions according to the ground rules of what we're doing. So does anybody have a question? Bob? Okay, because of the mic. There's a mention in Psalm 83 of some kind of confederacy. Yeah, I have no idea what you're talking about. I'm not familiar with that. Okay, yes. Absolutely. No, not at the end of the millennium.
Yeah.
Yeah. I totally would agree with what John Clay said yesterday. Yes?
Are you aware of any preparations that Jews have been making towards the building of that temple?
Well, there's an organization called the... Oh, is there any... Am I aware of any preparations that the Jews are making toward this? There's a group in Israel, in Jerusalem, called the Temple Mount Faithful and the Temple Institute. How official they are and how recognized they are by those in authority, I don't know. There's a man running for president of Israel right now. I just read this the other day. He's not prime minister, but president, which is a little bit more of an honorary position. But he's with the Temple Institute. And it was that was significant, I thought. That was interesting. I don't know how recognized the Temple Institute is. When I went to Israel, our guide kind of dismissed it, but he's not a Christian, the guide we had at that time. But, Steve?
The Temple Institute, normally, when we were first there, same time you were, we thought it would be messianic, and it wasn't.
Yeah.
These were Orthodox.
Yeah. Yes.
All of those things together.
Yes. Yeah, the Temple Mount Institute, to repeat for the mic, they are not messianic, they're Orthodox. They have made the utensils and so forth for the temple, but that's a far cry from actually building a temple. So my answer is I don't know of anything, you know, that's official on a big scale. It's a good question, but I don't know. There could be some things going on. Well, I feel sure there are things going on that we're not aware of. Yes?
Where do you see chronologically the Great White Throne Judgment?
When does the Great White Throne Judgment occur? It occurs after the 1,000 years.
Okay. End of the millennium?
Yeah, end of the millennium. Yeah.
Okay, here's a question. Are the seals, trumpets, and bowls judgments, are they chronological or blended?
They're blended. John Clace put up a outline, if you saw his talk. And he explained it verbally in his plenary, and then he put a chart up during his parallel session. They are blended, to use the word. Yeah. John goes through the six seals, and then he comes back, and he starts with the trumpets, and then he comes back and goes through the bowls, and there's overlap. Okay, anybody have a question? All right, good. I get a few more shots here because I got something I want to say. Is anybody aware that there's an election coming up next week? Anybody heard that? All right. There's a lot of fear in our country about the election. And I confess I've had some myself. Okay. I think this is very significant in light of the election. I'm going to try to do this in 5 minutes. I've got these slides because I thought if I have time, I'm going to do this. God's focus is on Israel, certainly, in these last days. But it's amazing, if you look back over the history of Israel, how much of the significant events that have happened in Israel are focused on Washington, D.C. It's unbelievable. Specifically through the presidents of the United States. Here are six of them. I'm sure you recognize their pictures. Let me briefly run through how God has used each one of these men, even when he probably wasn't aware of how God was using him. All right. Harry Truman was the president who, when Israel declared their independence in 1948, they didn't have a chance if somebody didn't stand with them. Harry Truman, before the day was over, said the United States recognizes the newborn state of Israel. First nation in the world to recognize them. It caught the attention of the whole world, legitimized them in the eyes of the world. And the president of Israel at that time said if there were no Harry Truman, there would be no Israel. That's how strongly they felt about Harry Truman. God used a president of the United States from the very beginning of the newborn state. All right, the next arrow points toward Egypt, 1979. Egypt made peace with Israel. It was mind-boggling after, you know, the 48 war, the 1967 war, that in 1979 any Arab state would make peace with Israel, with Anwar Sadat. But Jimmy Carter made that happen. If it wasn't for Jimmy Carter, humanly speaking, it wouldn't have happened. The signing of that covenant was at the White House in Washington, D.C. All right, my next arrow points toward Russia and Eastern Europe, where millions of Jews lived behind the Iron Curtain. Millions of them wanted to come into Israel during the return of the Jews to Israel in the 20th century, but couldn't because of the Iron Curtain. God used Ronald Reagan as the primary world leader to bring down the Iron Curtain. And God used Ronald Reagan in a great way to bring 2.5 million Jews from behind the Iron Curtain into Israel. Almost doubled the population of Jews in the nation of Israel. I think it grew from 3 million to 5.5 million because of the fall of the Iron Curtain. God used Ronald Reagan to accomplish that. The next arrow points toward, where is that, Steve? Jordan. You've heard of Jordan, Steve? Yeah, yeah. In 1994, Bill Clinton was the key to the deal between Jordan and Israel, and again, God used him to. These were, I guess, compared to what happened in the last 2 months, these are like baby steps, but steps nevertheless toward peace in the Middle East. All right, next arrow goes toward Iran. In 2015, Barack Obama made that deal with Iran. He felt that the way to peace in the Middle East was to bring peace with Iran. And Iran, he made promises to Iran. They made promises to him. And that deal, in the eyes of the Sunni Muslims, was a threat. And they saw it as a deal that would strengthen Iran in opposition to Israel and the Sunni states. In 2018, Israel sent spies or undercover people into Tehran. It's amazing what they did. They raided this warehouse and brought out all these records and documents. Total embarrassment to Iran, but Benjamin Netanyahu made a proclamation to the world, two words, Iran lied. President Trump responded to that by immediately breaking the Iran deal. But here's the point. That deal that Barack Obama made drove the Sunni Arabs toward Israel. God used it in a great way. In spite of what it was, God used it to push the mentality of the Arabs to think toward Israel so that when Donald Trump came along, they were ripe and ready for what he has led in his years as president. And then, of course, the last arrow is to the UAE and Bahrain, as we have looked at it earlier. So when you see how God has used these six presidents, which one of these can God use in the next 4 years? Either one. And I've got scripture to support that. He removes kings and he establishes kings. God's vote next week is the only one that counts. And he's in control. He knows what he's doing. The problem is, Ken, and some of us don't always like the way God votes. That's why we need this verse from Daniel 4. The Most High rules in the kingdom of men, gives it to whomever he wills, and sets over it the lowest of men. And he's done that at times, hasn't he? He doesn't always put the best guy in. Sometimes he puts the lowest guy in. And the reason he does that, and this is a verse we very much need, the king's heart is like channels of water in the hand of the Lord. He turns it wherever he wishes. And God's going to take Joe Biden or Donald Trump and turn their heart wherever he wishes. He's going to accomplish his purpose to get us closer to the rapture, the tribulation, the second coming, and the kingdom reign of Christ. I wanted to mention two things very briefly. This is announcements, so to speak. I gave messages on the peace deals on August 23rd and 30th, right after this came out, And I did a message on the election on September 20th. So if you're interested in learning more detail about what I shared today, you might go check out those messages. Also, I get a chance to redeem myself from my message this morning for the remnant of you that are here in the room. I meant to say a couple of things that came out after the session that some guys asked me about. We have the Lord's Supper twice a week on Sunday and Tuesday night. A number of you asked me about this. We have about 30 to 40 people at each of those. Over the years, we've had Lord's Supper meetings with 10 people, up to 60 people. We've had multiple Lord's Suppers because we found it was too many at one. It's better to have two that were smaller. All right. Thank you.